Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Ayusho.
Ayusho.
Pachayam.
Pachayam.
Jantos.
Jantos.
Tata Vapochayam
Vibhu
Ubhavyam
Rahita
Svasto
Dushtasya
Vidati
Asho.
Ayusho Pachayam Jantos.
Ayusho Pachayam Jantos.
Tathaivo Pachayam Vibhu.
Tathaivo Pachayam Vibhu.
Hubhavyam Rahita Svashto.
Hubhavyam Rahita Svashto.
Dushtasya Vididatyasho.
Dushtasya Vididatyasho.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu is all-powerful, and He awards the results of one's fruitive activities. Thus, although one living entity's duration of life is very small, whereas that of another is very great, He is always in His transcendental position, and there is no question of lessening or increasing His duration of life. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Both the mosquito and Lord Brahma are living entities in the material world. Both are minute sparks and are part of the Supreme Lord. The very short duration of life of the mosquito and the very long lifetime of Lord Brahma are both awarded by the Supreme Personality of Godhead according to the results of their karma. But in the Brahma Samhita we find it said, Karmani Nirdhati. The Lord diminishes or vanquishes the reactions of devotees. The same fact is explained in Bhagavad Gita, Yagnartat Karmanon Yantra. One should perform karma only for the purpose of satisfying the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, one is bound by the actions and reactions of karma. Under the law of karma, a living entity wanders within the universe under the rule of eternal time, and sometimes he becomes a mosquito and sometimes Lord Brahma. To a sane man, this business is not very fruitful. Bhagavad Gita 9.25 gives a warning to the living entities. Yanti deva vrata devan. Those who are addicted to the worship of demigods go to the planets of the demigods. And those who are addicted to the worship of pittas, forefathers, go to the pittas. Those who are inclined to material activities remain in the material sphere. But persons who engage in devotional service reach the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, where there is neither birth nor death nor different varieties of life under the influence of the law of karma. The best interest of the living entity is to engage himself in devotional service and go back home, back to Godhead. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has advised, quote, My friend, you are being washed away in material nature's waves of time. Please try to understand that you are the eternal servant of the Lord. Then everything will stop and you will be eternally happy. Unquote. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu is all-powerful and He awards the results of one's fruitive activities. Thus, although one living entity's duration of life is very small, whereas that of another is very great, He is always in His transcendental position and there is no question of lessening or increasing His duration of life. Om Agyan Timurandasya Ginangina Shilakaya Chakshurin Militam Jena Tasmai Sigurdave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bishnam Shtapitam Jena Bhutale Shwayam Rupukada Mayam Dadantishva Padantikam Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhaktivrindam Hare Krishna
Hare Krishna 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 Hare
Ram
Omam Vim Shom Om Parom Tatakata Kikesha Kajalat Padakalochana Bhadharaka Nakas Varsity Vasingha Namostate.
So this verse is in effect.
made comparison between the living entities and the Supreme Lord. Sometimes two things of similar nature are compared in order to appreciate the superiority of one over the other. Just like sometimes, well, when we go shopping, there's different items which are very similar, but we pick the two items up and we carefully compare them, careful examination, in order to understand which one is superior, and then we purchase the superior. In the same way, if we compare the Supreme Lord and the living entities, as this verse is actually doing, we'll find many similarities, but we will also find distinct differences. Therefore, it is stated in the Svetasvatara Upanishad, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Ekobahanam Yovadidati Kamam, that the Supreme Lord is eternal, and the living entities are also eternal. The Supreme Lord is cognizant, and the living entities are also cognizant. The difference is that the Supreme Lord is that one who is supplying the necessities of life to everyone else. So there's many similarities. Because we are part and parcel of the Lord, we are in quality one with God. But we are not in quantity one with God. So this verse is stressing simultaneously oneness and difference. That is our philosophy. Achinta veda veda tattva. That the living entity is simultaneously one with and different from the Supreme Lord. So it's all right to appreciate how we are one with Krishna. But it's essential that we understand the difference so that we know our actual position as Krishna's servants, as his parts and parcels. Otherwise, we make the mistake of the Mayavadis, that we want to become one with Krishna. Prabhupada said there's two types of illusion in this material world. Maya's position, she takes us from our original position, she throws us into the material world, and she covers us with delusion. So Maya has two functions. She throws and she covers. And that covering potency takes on two basic components. The first one is that I think that I am this body. The second one is I think that I am God. These two types of illusions. I am the body, or the last snare of material existence, that I am God. So we may appreciate the similarities, but it is stressed, the difference, so that we can always remember what is our actual position and not act out of context. It is stated in the Vedas, Ekobahu Sham, the one has become many. The one Lord has become many. But then again it is stressed, Asham Urdhva. Asham Urdhva means no one is equal to or no one is greater than Krishna. Asha means no one is equal, and Urdhva, no one is greater than the Lord. So this verse is stressing the differences. So our position is that we are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Jivera Sarupoya Krishnara Nitya Das. The living entity is eternally the servant of the Supreme Lord. We are servants, but we are not masters. To become the master, that is artificial. Of course, there's spiritual master. But spiritual master means he's the servant of the Lord. Prabhupada said spiritual master means the best servant of the Lord. So though we may sometimes take the position of master, actually we're acting in the capacity always as servant. As Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said one time, he saw his own disciples as guru and himself as their servant, helping them go back home, back to Godhead. So our position is eternally the servant. And when we try to act as the master artificially, it becomes a very difficult situation. Prabhupada would often use the example of man and woman. Man is, it's a relative example, but it may not be so much appreciated, especially in this country. All the lectures I'm giving at the Sunday programs, there's always the question, what about the position of women in Krishna consciousness? You know, aren't they equal? No! Yes. You have to start saying now, he, she. That's the new line in Australia. When you describe, you can't say he or she because it looks like you're favoring one over the other, so you say he, she. Even when you talk about God, you have to say he, she. In the Bible, they're translating that now, he, she. Why is he a male? You know, why can't he be female too? Well, welcome to Krishna consciousness. We have Radha Krishna, he, she, the supreme divine couple. So Prabhupada would use the example that man is Purusha and woman is Prakriti. Man is the enjoyer and woman is the enjoyed. But in a true loving relationship, when it's not artificial, the woman actually takes the position of liking to be enjoyed. Her position is to be a servant, and she appreciates that position, especially in Vedic culture. The woman is protected by the husband materially and spiritually. So she feels it. It's not a difficult thing that she is taking the position of a servant. But when the woman tries to become the man, that creates a chaotic situation, like we have in modern society. The women all want to be like the men, and the men, they also want to be like the women. So it becomes a very artificial situation. Some sociologists have stated that the whole women's liberation movement was actually started by the men so they could better exploit the women. And certainly women are much more easily exploitable now in their so-called position of independence. So we are not happy when we are independent. We are happy when we are dependent. We're dependent upon the Supreme Lord, dependent upon the spiritual master, dependent upon the Vaishnavas, dependent upon the husband. This is our natural position, and if we learn to be submissive servants, we'll find that we're actually very happy, because it's artificial to be otherwise. It is completely artificial. I remember in San Francisco one time, Prabhupada was giving a lecture, and he touched on this point of woman's position in society. And afterwards, one, feminist, she stood up and she screamed out, "What do you think of woman's liberation?" A big challenge like that. And Prabhupada, he never heard of this thing. India, he'd come to the West, he'd seen many things, but he'd never been told about the women's liberation movement. So Prabhupada, very calmly and coolly, he said, "Yes," he said, "do not worry. All the women in Krishna consciousness are liberated." So that is our position. We are servants. We are the Prakriti and the Lord is the Purusha. And when we try to become Purusha, it makes for a very distasteful situation. So better learn how to become Prakriti, to become the enjoyed, to become the humble servant. Although we are very tiny, we are glorious when we are with Krishna. The tendency, the disease of the conditioned soul is to become big, the big fish. And we think to become tiny, that is something insignificant. But to become the tiny servant of the Lord, that is aspired after by the Vaishnava. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu played like that. Dasu anudas, das, 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 das. Many times removed from the position of master, I want to be the servant. And as we stated the other day, when one is the servant, it's a very fortunate position because he's getting the mercy of his master. So if you have many masters, you get a lot of mercy. Therefore, devotees are always trying to serve Krishna, Guru, Vaishnava, and anything which is in relationship to Krishna, tadiya. Because we know they're all forms of mercy. Krishna is appearing to us in many ways to give his mercy. So to become tiny, that is our desire, to become the tiny, insignificant servant of the Lord. That is a glorious position. Because Prabhupada said, if you serve a first-class man, you become first-class. But if you serve a third-class man, you become fifth-class. If you serve a first-class man, first-class. If you serve a third-class, you become fifth-class. So our position is glorious when we're in relationship to Krishna, and it becomes very quickly inglorious when we're outside the realm of devotional service. People hear about service, ugh, I don't want to be a servant of God, ugh. They don't know the bliss of service. Our original constitutional position is to become servant. So as soon as we enter into Krishna consciousness, we feel relieved of the anxiety of trying to artificially be the master. Prabhupada said like that, pure devotional service means immediate relief from anxiety, material anxiety. As soon as something is seen in its proper context, as soon as something is situated naturally, it's very blissful. But taken out of context, it's otherwise. So, in devotional service, it's natural. Outside of devotional service, it is an unnatural situation. Yas yastir bhaktir bhavati akinshana savayarganistatta samasate shura. The one who is a devotee of the Lord, he possesses all the good qualities of the demigods. The one who is not a devotee of the Lord, not engaged in devotional service, he has no good qualities. Pretty cut and dry. I'm not saying, Krishna is saying, Prabhupada said. Buddha, I am not saying, you are ass. Krishna is saying. So the materialists actually have no good qualities. That is because they are hovering on the mental platform and are sure to be attracted by the glaring material energy. So as soon as we become into our natural position, everything becomes nice. But as soon as we step outside the realm of devotional service, watch out. Just like in the forest, that Marichi, he took the form of a deer and he was going here and there. And Sita said, "Oh, that pretty little deer, please, Ram, go get that deer for me." So Ram, he said, "All right, Sita." One time we were in Hyderabad with Prabhupada, and one lady asked Prabhupada, "What is the meaning of Ramayana?" So Prabhupada said, "The whole meaning of Ramayana is just to show the difficulty that one has when he becomes attached to a woman." No problem. So then Ram, he went after the deer, and then Marichi, he called out, "Lakshman, Sita," in a voice like Ram. So then Sita was there. "Lakshman, you go. Go get Ram is in trouble." And then, of course, we know the pastime. So then Lakshman, before going, he drew that mystic circle around Sita. And he said, "If you stay within this mystic circle, no harm can become you. But as soon as you step out of that circle, trouble will befall you. So stay with inside." So as long as she was there, even Ravana, who was a powerful ten-headed demon, but she's simply a thin, frail woman in the forest, living on berries and roots. Big Ravana couldn't approach her. As long as she stayed within that circle of devotional service. So in the same way, as long as we stay within Krishna consciousness, and what is Krishna consciousness? What does it mean to stay within Krishna consciousness? Does it mean to stay within the temple, the four walls of the temple? No, it means to stay within the principles of devotional service. Chanting 16 rounds a day, following the four regulative principles, living in the association of devotees. This is what it means to live within the realm of devotional service. And if we practice that process of devotional service, we can go anywhere and everywhere and we'll never be affected. So we have to stay within the realm of Krishna consciousness. And once we step outside, immediately trouble begins to happen. So our position is eternal servants of the Lord. And something, again, is appreciated when it's seen in its proper context. When something's outside of its context, it's not appreciated. Like, for instance, water. Chanakapani gives a very interesting analogy in his Niti Shastra. He said, water is very invigorating before a meal. Water is like nectar during a meal. But after a meal, water is just like poison. Actually, you're supposed to drink before you eat, fill up part of the stomach. It actually helps the digestion begin, because as soon as one starts thinking of food, the acids in the stomach are produced like this. So to assist those acids, one can take some water. So it actually, if you take a little water before your meal, it helps you in your digestion and your appreciation of the food. You can try it. Devotees will do anything to appreciate prasadam, so try this one. So during the meal, water is also appreciated. You know, we had a very nice first class pizza yesterday, but the pizza was made even nicer when we had that ginger beer that you have, or that fizzy drink. You know, I was discussing, and it was really nice. So water is like nectar drink, but after a meal, if you drink water, what happens? Burns. It puts out the fire of digestion, and you get a stomach ache, cramps, air, etc. So water is appreciable in one sense, and at one moment, and it's not appreciable when it's outside of its context. In another sense, it becomes like poison. So in the same way, the living entity is useful in Krishna's service, and outside of Krishna's service, he's useless. He becomes bereft of all good qualities, just like a spark in relationship to the fire. It's glowing like a beautiful ember in relationship to the fire, but as soon as the fire pops it out of the fire, the farther away it goes from the fire, it becomes extinguished. So the farther we go away from Krishna, the more we lose our good qualities. And conversely, the more close we come to Krishna, again, even though we may have been burnt out, as they say. He's a burnt out hippie, we used to say. We may even be burnt out, we may even be extinguished. But as soon as we come back into the fire of Krishna consciousness, immediately we begin to develop our good qualities again. So in Krishna's service, useful. Outside of Krishna's service, useless. I remember in Gurukul, in New Mayapur, the children, of course, they never had any association. Take a little water. The children never had any association with the karmis, so they didn't know any bad words, so they had to invent their own bad words. There's so many bad words. They call them four-letter words. But our children didn't know those. So, but then when they got angry, they would call someone very bad names. Like, I remember that one name, if someone was really bad, "You donkey ear." Called me a donkey ear? But the worst word that you could use as a Gurukul boy, "You're useless, Prabhu." he's useless. So children, when they would curse somebody, "You're useless." "Oh, you called me useless." So it's appropriate. Outside of Krishna consciousness, actually, we're useless. Outside of the context of our natural position. Chanaka Pandit brings out another way of seeing this. He says something, well, some things are very appreciable, like rain, food, a gift, and the light of a lamp. All these things have their very practical uses. One can appreciate them. But outside their context, Chanaka Pandit says, rain which falls upon the sea is useless. So is food to one who is full. It is vain to give a gift to one who's wealthy, and the light of a lamp is useless during the day. So such an important thing as you and me, because at least Krishna sees that we're important. Others may not see we're important, but Krishna sees that we're important. Devotees see that we're important. As long as we're in Krishna consciousness, we're significant. Outside of the temple, insignificant. I was just reading at the doctor's office yesterday. There was some book about all the horses that are wild horses you have in Australia, up in north. There's many horses that run wild. And it's, Brumbies. There's many animals, I think, which were originally introduced into this country for a particular purpose. Like, was it here or New Zealand? They introduced opossums. Opossums and then rabbits also. So, you know, in their context, in their position, properly situated, they were very valuable. I don't know what they did. I think, what did the rabbits eat? They ate up something. They what? Oh, they were brought for food. Okay, well, I guess a few of them escaped or something. So, you know, they were very much appreciated in the beginning. But then when they were no longer properly situated, they become a big problem for this country. There's billions of rabbits or something.
And they have the cane toads.
And the cane toads, yeah. And in New Zealand, it's opossums. There's just billions of them everywhere, you know. They introduced them to do something, to eat some kind of bug or something that was on them. Anyway, so one moment they're appreciated, next moment they're not appreciated. So these Bambis, what do you call them, Bambis?
Brumbies.
Watching too many movies, Bambi. So these horses, actually they take helicopters and they shoot them. There's a whole campaign, they take helicopters and they come in with the guns, they shoot the horses, and there's this whole, you know, thing now. The environmentalists are becoming so upset because they're killing these horses like anything. But a horse in its proper context is very much appreciated. There was a famous battle. I forget the name of the battle. I forget the king also. But there was a battle, and this king was on his horse. And of course, when you're on a horse, you have superiority over the foot soldiers. You know, they're coming, but you're higher up. The steed is very powerful, and you can move quickly and charge and so forth. But the king got knocked off his horse. So he was just about to be killed. So he said, "A horse, a horse. My kingdom for a horse." He was willing to exchange his whole kingdom, his vast riches, his beautiful wives, his palace, everything that he had. He was willing to give it up just for such a Brumby. I'll get it later. One of those horses that are running wild in Northern Ireland. He was ready. You know. So in its proper context, that horse was like the most important thing. So we have to become situated again in our original glory as servants of the Lord. That is the whole process of devotion. We have to become again situated in our true glory. Just like a crystal. A crystal looks like a cut piece of glass, actually. I mean, you can walk along and just knock it over with your foot. It's nothing very significant. But if you take that crystal and you situate it properly in front of a light, what happens? You see all the colors of the rainbow, isn't it? You see, that ordinary piece of glass, crystal, you just pick, it seems like nothing, it's worth 2 cents, but you pick it up and you put it near a brilliant light, then all the beautiful colors of the rainbow come out. So in the same way, separated from Krishna, we're like lifeless, useless, but you put that devotee in association with Krishna, in association with the devotees, what happens? all his beautiful qualities come out, just like the rainbow. Yasyasti bhaktir bhavati akinchana savaya ganastata samasatesha. So at the present moment, well, not ourselves, but most of the living entities are not situated in their true glory. Actually, they're in a very embarrassing situation. We're in a very embarrassing situation in this material world. We should be embarrassed. Shame on you, sometimes they say. Have you no shame? Is that famous statement. Have you no shame? So we're in a very, we should be embarrassed. Look at our situation. We possess an eternal form full of bliss and knowledge. Yet at this particular moment, we're attached to a sack of mucus, bile, and air. Aren't you embarrassed?
Shame on you.
We possess an eternal form of bliss and knowledge in relationship with the Supreme Lord. But somehow or other, we have accepted this sack of mucus, bile, and air. That's what it is, Prabhus. We still catch ourselves, isn't it, sometimes walking down the street. There's a big pane glass window. You look over. Okay, that's all right. Looking good. Yeah. Let's see, go back there a little bit. There. That there. Okay. Neck beads. Okay. And we fall into to become free from the bodily concept of life is not so easy. We think, oh gosh, another class. I'm not this body. How many times do I have to hear it? But if we actually realized we weren't this body, we would never contemplate for one moment any material desire. But you judge for yourself. Honesty is a very important policy in Krishna consciousness, to be straightforward. How many times do we actually think for a little bit about that material desire, then, okay, go away, will you? Will you go away? Just get away. All right, come back, I'll stay for a few more minutes, you know, daydream. But actually, if we were actually knew that we were not this body, if we were actually convinced that we were not this body, then we wouldn't even contemplate a material desire for a moment. Just like, who was it? Jamunacharya. Jamunacharya was saying, whenever I think of sex life, how I enjoyed sex life before, he said, my lips curl in distaste and I spit at the thought. So somehow or other, the false ego was very strong and we still remain attached to this sack of mucus, bile, and air. This is our unfortunate situation. 99.9% of the people are totally attached to this material body. But actually we possess an eternal form full of bliss and knowledge. One time, Gorkhasura Das Babaji, he used to live in the forest. So his students had to go out into the jungle to actually take darshan from him, to visit him. So one time, one of his students went out there. And they had darshan, etc. And then Gorkhasura Das Babaji, he gave some nice sweets, a little sack of sweets, like some laddu, to one of his disciples. So his disciple took those laddus and he was walking back through the jungle late at night. Late darshan, I think it was midnight or something. So he came across this huge festival in the middle of the forest. There was a big party going on. He said, wow, look at this. This is a big party. And, you know, and why don't you dance with us? No, I don't have time now. I have to come and have some prasad. No, I don't have time. We'll take some prasad with you. All right, I'll take some prasad. So they gave him a little bag like this. And this is a weird party. It seemed a little ethereal or something. So then he got back and then he put his two bags of prasad there on his desk and then he took rest. In the morning he woke up and that prasad at the party last night. So he woke up and he looked inside the bag. It was stool and urine. What was this stool and urine? It was nice halava last night. Now it has become stool and urine. So he'd given up the bag of his Guru Maharaj. He'd left that there at the party in preference to this bag of stool and urine. He's very embarrassed, so he thinks there must be some significance for this. So what does he did? The next night he went back to see Gorkhasura Das Babaji and he said, Guru Maharaj, like a fool, I gave up the prasad that you had given me and I accepted the prasad of these people in the forest. Can you explain how I was so foolish to accept it as stool and urine? And Gorkhasura Das Babaji said, yes, those were all ghosts and hobgoblins and they had tricked you. They had taken these forms appearing to be like a nice party, but actually they were ghosts and they played a trick on you. So in the same way, Maya has played a trick on us. We have given up the prasad of Krishna to accept the bhog of material life. That is our... We have left aside Krishna's service and we've accepted this miserable material world. Therefore, there's a nice verse in the 10th canto, Yashatma buddhi kunape tri tadhute. One who accepts this body as the self, who has affinity for his relatives, and sees the land of his birth as worshipable, and who bathes in holy places without taking advantage of the saintly persons who are there, he is no better than an ass or a cow. So when we hear like this, we understand our actual position as spirit souls and our awkward situation within this material world. We should become embarrassed. So what does it mean, embarrassed? Embarrassed means humility. We should develop humility. Trinada pisanichena. We should become very humble. Embarrassed is better understood as a Vaishnava by humility. We understand our tiny position. The closer we come to Krishna, the more we can appreciate our actual position. Just like if you see something very great in this material world, the closer you come to it, actually you realize how small you are. Sometimes people have that experience when they go out in the Mother Nature, the great sky, the big sunset, the big trees, they realize how small and insignificant. So one sign of an advanced devotee, an actual sign of someone who's making spiritual advancement, he becomes more and more humble. Why? Because he realizes the greatness of God. In comparison to realizing the greatness of God, we realize our own humble position. So you'll never see a great soul saying, "I am great." He'll say, "I am very small." Someone who makes spiritual advancement will never present himself as being insult to injury. Maya throws us and she covers us. It's bad enough we've been kicked out, but we take pride in it. This body is actually a blemish. Just like in India, if you eat too many sweets during the hot season, what happens? Boils. You get boils. If you eat too many sweets, then you get boils. So if you walk around, in India, if you see someone with a boil, you can say, "Aha, you're eating too many sweets, can't control your tongue. Oh gosh, how did you know?" It's bad enough they've got the boil, but it's a sign that that person has done something wrong. So this body is a sign that we've done something wrong. It's nothing wonderful. You may have the most handsome body, you may have the most beautiful body, the softest hair, the nicest glimmer in your eye, the biggest muscles. But it's all a sign of your foolishness. So it's a folly to be wise where ignorance is bliss. And we like to expose it. That's why in Vedic culture we cover up. We like to see ourselves as Vaishnavas. Nice dhoti and kurta. Nice sari. Head always covered with the sari. Nice fresh tilak on. Make the best use of a bad bargain. We don't like to expose the body. When you see people walking down the street, now the new thing is the short skirts again. We don't want to see, but you have to see. When you're walking down the street, you try not to see, but there they are, exposing their ignorance. Just look at this ignorance that I've got. This is how we should see it. What did Chanaka Pandit say? He said, three different living entities see a woman in a different way. A lusty man sees that woman as a sense, as a means of his sense enjoyment. A dog sees it as a piece of meat, something to eat. And a saintly person sees it as a corpse. So they're exposing themselves. The women are exposing themselves. The men are also exposing themselves, trying to attract the opposite sex. But we're not attracted, are we? When we see those things out there, we're thinking, "God, look at that ignorance. It's just a bag of mucus, bile, and air. Beauty's only skin deep." Right? Because Maya has arranged it in a certain way, it may appear to be attractive. But if you just move the nose 1/4 inch over that way, it becomes detestable. Right? There's different lumps on the body. Somebody has small lumps, somebody has big lumps. Oh, this one's very nice, this one's not so nice. Just see how the ignorance. It's just a sack, but if the sack is protruding in certain places more than others, we think it's a beautiful sack. We're attracted to it. Or if some dead hair is growing on the body and it's curled in a particular way or straight in a particular way, we think this is something wonderful. This is all ignorance. We must always remember it's a sack of mucus, bile, and air. And when they expose it, that's their ignorance, and we should not fall prey to their ignorance. We should not stoop down to their level of consciousness, but we should always exhibit our higher level of Krishna consciousness by wearing devotional attire. We don't like to dress like the Karmis. We like to dress like the Vaikuntha residents. Prabhupada said, someone has come to this movement, they were dirty and this and that before they came, but now that they have put on nice dhoti and kurta and sari and kunti mala, like this, and nice tilak prabhas, they look just like they've come from Vaikuntha. So we don't want to stoop down to them. We want to always be in that elevated position. We don't want to expose our ignorance. Just like Prabhupada repeated that story. I don't know if it's actually in the Vedas, but there's the story of the king's new clothes. So there was once a king, and he desired that he would have some outfit which no one else had. He wanted something very special. So he offered a very handsome sum of 10,000 rupees to that tailor who could come up with the most unique set of clothes. So different tailors were coming, and they were showing him, oh, just look at this beautiful set. It's bedecked with jewels and rubies and pearls. And someone else had the nicest silk, and someone else had nice woven cloth in this way. And he was going through all. Then one very intelligent weaver, one very intelligent tailor, he came and he said, yes, he said, my clothes are very special. You have to be a special person to see. Are you a special person? Oh, yeah, of course I'm a special person. Yes, yes. Well, look at these clothes. And the king couldn't see anything because actually there was nothing there. So he said, look at these clothes. Do you see? Oh, yes, yes. Very, very good. He excused all the other tailors. Your clothes are useless, he said. I'll take these clothes. So the tailor said, yes, my dear king, why don't you try them on? Yes, and he took all his clothes off. They're in his birthday suit. And the tailor very expertly, yes, yeah. You're so intelligent, my dear king. Yes, yes, I thank you very much. You look very beautiful in these clothes, he said. He said, but, you know, those persons who are foolish, not as intelligent as you, because you're the most intelligent, they may not be able to appreciate as much as you, so don't worry about that. So it became time for the darshan. The kings, they have their darshans, just like the deities have their darshans. The kings are sometimes very puffed up. They also have darshans. So it came time for the king to walk out on the palace veranda, and his thousands of subjects were out there. So they're all calling, the king, the king, the king, and the king walks out stark naked in his new clothes. And immediately the whole kingdom starts to laugh. He's made a huge joke of himself. But what does the king do? Does he see any significance? He's so puffed up, he thinks, just see the fools, they're laughing at my new clothes. He walks. So it's a folly to be wise where ignorance is bliss. They want to expose, they think this body is something wonderful, like a wonderful set of clothes. But actually this body is simply ignorance. So we should not fall prey. And the Lord has warned us, just as Prabhupada says here in the purport. To a sane man, this business is not very fruitful. And the Lord gives a warning to the living entities. So the Lord is actually reminding us of our foolish position at every moment through his instructions in Bhagavad Gita. The most intelligent man, he begins to realize his awkward position in this world. That is the real definition of intelligence, like Sanatana Goswami. He was apparently so materially intelligent, but when he approached Lord Chaitanya, he said, what use is all this intelligence? I don't even know who I am. They call me an intelligent person, but I don't even know who I am. So real intelligence begins to awaken when we understand our awkward position that we have foolishly identified with this body. We have made sense gratification the goal of our life. And that's when actual intelligence begins to awaken. So the Lord, he's giving us so many warnings. He's trying to help us. Sarvasya chaham hridi sunivishto. For those who are devotees, he's awakening him. And for those who are foolish, he's allowing them to be in ignorance. He's giving them the forgetfulness. He's giving us his warning. In the Bhagavad Gita, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punar Arvito Arjuna Mamopetete Kontiya Punar Janma Nividyate. There's the warning. An intelligent person will take that warning. You can't be happy in this material world. From the highest planet down to the lowest, all are places of misery. Repeated birth and death take place. So the shlokas of Bhagavad Gita, the shlokas of the Bhagavatam, they are guidelines. They're the guiding light. Just like you're driving down the road, there's so many signs to warn you. Actually, all the signs on the road are basically warning signs, aren't they? Speed limit, there's a turn here, there's a bump here. Basically, all the signs on the road are warnings to be careful. So there's so many injunctions in the Vedic scriptures. Be careful. Don't do this, don't do that. But foolishly, we sometimes disobey. Then we find ourselves in trouble. Krishna's giving so many indications that we cannot be happy. Actually, the minute we appeared in this world, there was a good lesson. What do they say? First impressions are the most important. What was your first experience when you came in this world? The very first experience. You remember? Probably don't remember. When you just came out of your mother's womb, what was your first welcoming to this world? The doctor picked you up on your two little feet, give you a big slap on your backside. And what did you do? As best as your two little vocal cords could do, your little lungs. Welcome to the material world. But as if we didn't understand, first impressions are the most important. The first impression you have of someone, of a place, generally it's, you know, there's that sixth sense that can help you understand. So welcome to the material world, Prabhu. But we're so foolish, we're so obstinate. And all along the path, the Lord is giving us various impressions. Janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha dosha darshanam. An intelligent person, he's aware of the evils of birth, death, old age, and disease, and we should not ignore them. There's little signs all the way that you can't be happy here. Krishna's giving little signs the whole way. You can't be happy, but we ignore them. But if you ignore the signs on the road, what's going to happen? You're going to have an accident. So if you ignore the signs of material nature, which showing that you cannot be happy in this world, you're going to have an accident. There's a warning. Somebody's going to blow up. Just like in Bengal, there's a tiger, the Bengal tiger. Now you might think that the Bengal tiger, because he's so powerful, because he's so big and strong, it's very easy for him to get food, right? The tiger, or the lion, or the king of the jungle. So he's going on. And you know, who can outrun a tiger? Nobody. Who can get themselves free from the grip of a Bengal tiger? Nobody. But there's a warning there. Mother Nature has made a little warning for all the living entities. Not so easy for tigers to get their food, because along with the Bengal tiger, there's a little rodent. And this little rodent, anywhere there's a Bengal tiger, there's this rodent. Now it's ringing upstairs. There's this rodent. And this little rodent accompanies the Bengal tiger. And his business in life is simply to go, chee-chee, 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 chee-chee. Whenever the Bengal tiger is out on the hunt, automatically that little rodent, he follows. He goes, chee-chee, chee-chee, chee-chee. And that sign is a warning to all the animals in the forest. Bengal tiger is on the run. So instinctively, when the animals in the forest hear that little chirp-chirp, that little beep-beep, whatever it is, of the rodent, they immediately flee. And only the most obstinate, stupid, foolish ones, they stick around and get eaten by the tiger. Very often it's the deer. The deer has this anomaly that when she's drinking in the water, she becomes fascinated by her reflection. Just like sometimes people do when they're in front of the mirror. They can spend hours in front of the mirror. So the Bengal, the deer, many often when deer go to drink from a pond, they see their reflection and they become enchanted. Oh, who is this beautiful person? And the tiger is screaming, and the little rodent is going, chee-chee, 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 chee-chee. But the deer is just thinking, oh, how beautiful, and all of a sudden, wow, tiger jumps. So we're going on, fascinated by this material body, and the tiger of time is creeping up. It's your 36th birthday, it's your 37th birthday, your 38th birthday, your 39th. It's your 40th, it's your 41st, and still we're trying to make the arrangements, putting on the cosmetics and getting the hair dyed and changing the clothes and we're becoming still enchanted, and we're not seeing the tiger of time is creeping up. We're not becoming Krishna conscious. We're not becoming detached from the body. We're not utilizing our life properly, and finally, death comes. Tiger. So that is our unfortunate. So the warnings are there. The warnings are there, the futility of material life. And if we just use a little bit of intelligence, our intelligence is Bhagavad Gita. Our intelligence is the words of the spiritual master. We don't have any intelligence, actually. If we're so intelligent, what are we doing here? What's a nice person like you doing in a place like this? Another famous saying. So if we're so intelligent, then why do we have to suffer birth? If we're so intelligent, why do we have to suffer old age? Why do we have to suffer disease? Why do we have to die? If we're so intelligent, we're not intelligent. Therefore, we surrender to the superior intelligence of Guru Garanga. That's intelligent. They say you've surrendered, you've become zombies, you've given up your... No. We're the most intelligent because we know that Śrīla Prabhupāda knows what is best. There was a television program in America, Father Knows Best. There's a store I think I saw downtown, it says Grandma Knows Best. Was that in Sydney? I think it was in Sydney. So we know that Prabhupada knows best, so we never trust our own intelligence. We see everything in relationship to the words of Śrīla Prabhupāda. Therefore, there are so many awkward situations that we can get ourselves into in this material world. Therefore, we have to constantly hear from Śrīla Prabhupāda. We have to constantly read Śrīla Prabhupāda's books. Within Śrīla Prabhupāda's books, there's sufficient information that we can protect ourselves from the trappings of Maya, and we can engage ourselves positively in devotional service. So Maya has many tricks, but Prabhupada knows every one of them. And if we read his books, then we never have to fear that we'll fall into a trap of Maya. Of course, sometimes the instructions seem a little bit difficult. There's some austerities there. But Prabhupada said austerity means to accept some discomfort for the sake of spiritual advancement. So everything that Prabhupada says may not suit us immediately, but with our intelligence, understanding that Prabhupada is transcendentally situated, just like this verse is mentioning, Krishna is transcendentally situated. So Prabhupada is transcendentally situated. So his intelligence is clean, his intelligence is clear. So even he tells us to do something which we don't like to do, we know it's for our betterment. Those are called the regulative principles of freedom. The regulative principles, but they, through those principles, we will actually be able to achieve freedom. So willingly we accept them. Getting up early, abstaining from certain things, doing this, sometimes it's going out on Sangatan. What could be more austere than having to associate with those people out there? But that we know that by doing it, we're pleasing Prabhupada and we get his mercy. So we're not adverse to accepting any injunction which may be difficult for us, because we know that Prabhupada's intelligence is pure. And we have to follow it. Just like Jesus. Jesus once had a disciple. This disciple was suffering for many years from a stomach ailment, stomach problems. And he was becoming very, very thin. The more he'd eat, the thinner he'd become. So the other disciples were just saying, you know, you're just not eating enough. You have to eat more, eat more, eat more. So the more he would eat, he'd become thinner and he would become sicker. So one day Jesus visited these particular group of disciples. So he came in, he said to that particular disciple, you fast for 40 days and 40 nights, then you will be freed from your problem. You fast and you pray to God. So some of the disciples who didn't have very much faith in Jesus, they said, wow, how cool he can be making his disciple fast for 40 days. The problem is that the disciple is not eating enough. They tried to challenge the instruction of the spiritual master. They tried to overcome the intelligence of Guru. They weren't faithful. Yasya Devi para bhaktir yata devi tata guru. One who has full faith in the instructions of the Lord and the spiritual master, the full import of Vedic knowledge is revealed to that person. We can never question. We have to have faith. So that disciple, he had a little faith. So he began to fast for 7 days, for 14 days, for 21 days, for 20. And then he himself began to doubt, oh, but my master has asked me to fast, but it's so difficult, I'm so hungry, I want to eat. But he had enough faith to continue. So on the 40th day, 41st day, Jesus came back. He's so skinny, he's sitting there. So then Jesus took a warm cup of milk and honey. You can imagine if you've been fasting for 40 days and someone brings a nice warm cup of milk and nice honey in there. So he said, I'm going to put this in front of your mouth. You open your mouth and you don't drink. At that moment, a greater percentage of Jesus' disciples walked away. Our master is not a real master. They lost faith. But that disciple and a few others, they stayed there. And that man opened his mouth, and Jesus held the cup of milk and honey before his mouth. And after 5 or 6 minutes, the head of a tapeworm appeared out of the man's mouth and went to drink the honey and milk. And Jesus took 2 stones and crushed the head of that tapeworm. And then he pulled it out of the man's insides. It was a long tapeworm like this. So the actual reason that person was sick was the tapeworm. And the more food he gave, the more food he ate, the more the tapeworm would eat, and the more skinny and more sick he'd become. So Jesus actually knew. So he made him fast. That tapeworm was as hungry as the man. And when you put that milk and honey there, the tapeworm came out and Jesus crushed it. So we have to have faith in the instructions of Guru. Yasya Devi Parabhaktir Yata Devi Tata Guru. We are not alone in this process. One should never feel alone in this process. We have Krishna, and we have Krishna's representative, and we have the Vaishnavas, and all of them are concerned for our spiritual welfare. That is the nature of the Lord. As we mentioned yesterday, He's compassionate. That's the nature of Guru. Guru is described in that song by Narottam Das Thakur as the best friend of the devotee, best friend of the disciple. And certainly the Vaishnavas are very merciful. Vanchakalpa turubhyascha kripa sindhu bevacha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha. So we're never alone. We're surrounded by well-wishers. Prabhupada used to sign his letters, "Your ever well-wisher." That means at every moment, Prabhupada is our well-wisher. But what does it mean to have Prabhupada as our well-wisher? To follow very strictly his instructions day and night. Then you'll always have Prabhupada's association. He'll always be your well-wisher. And the Lord, He's also your well-wisher. Tesham satara yuktanam bhajatam pratipurvikam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upyantite. To those who constantly serve me with love and devotion, I give the understanding by which they come to me. Krishna will always try to help his devotee. Even if you stumble across Krishna, you just somehow or other, you just stumble across this process of Krishna consciousness, Krishna will help you. What to speak of those who are making a serious effort in devotional service? We should never be discouraged. Krishna is there to help. Just like there's a story of Daku Bhagavan. Daku Bhagavan, the thief god. There was once a man, and he was a thief by nature. So this man, he was looking at the best way that he could steal money. So he noticed that all the pilgrims, when they came to the town he was living in, they used to go to the temple. He was fortunate enough to be living in a holy city. So all the pilgrims were coming to the temple. So he was thinking, well, if I go to the temple, that's where I can steal my riches, because all the pilgrims are coming there. So he went to one of the prominent temples in town, and he sat behind the wall of the temple room, and he was thinking, now, I will wait for them to come out, then I will steal their riches. So he was waiting there, and while he was waiting, he was obliged to hear the lecture of the priest. So the priest was lecturing Krishna this, Krishna that, and Krishna this, and Krishna's Bhagavan. Krishna is the owner of all opulence. Krishna has so, he has all the wealth, Krishna. So the man started thinking, this is the person I want to find. I can give his riches. That is the person I want to know. So he's sitting there, and he's describing how the Lord has beautiful alligator-shaped earrings made of pure gold, and beautiful pearls bedeck his body, and valuable necklaces, and he has the Kastubya jewel. Kastubya jewel is the most valuable of all jewels. And he said, then he became convinced, that's the one I want. I want to find that person. So he's listening more intently. Where can I find that person? So then the man, he quoted the verse, the priest, Naham tishtami vaikunte yoginam ideyeshuva tat tat tishtami narada yatta gayanti madbhaktim. Krishna says, I am not in Vaikuntha, nor am I in the hearts of the yogis. I remain where my devotees are chanting my glories. That's it. I got to find out where they're chanting the names of the glories of what's he call him? Gopal. Hey, Gopal. I got to find out where they're chanting the names. So, you know, kind of mixed in with the crowd. And he says, excuse me, do you know where I could find Gopal? The pilgrim said, yes, Gopal's in Vrindavan. Thank you very much. And then just to be sure, he went to another group of pilgrims. Excuse me. Do you perhaps know where I could find that little boy who wears the Kastubya jewel? And he has a peacock feather in his hair. Gopal by the name. Could you tell me where I could find Gopal? So, oh yes, Gopal. He lives in Vrindavan. So everywhere he went, he heard that Gopal lives in Vrindavan. So he made a beeline for Vrindavan. And he got into the village of Vrindavan. Gopal, Gopal, gotta find Gopal. Where's Gopal? Where's Gopal? He met one pilgrim. Where's Gopal? I can't see him. Well, if you chant his name, you'll see him. All right, what's his name? Another name is Krishna. All right. So, if I sing his name, I'll find him, yes? So, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Ram Ram. So he became mad for finding Krishna. He was running all around Vrindavan chanting, "Hey Govinda, hey Gopal, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram," day and night running on the bank of Govardhan Hill, running out at Radhakund, at Keshi God, Bamsi Bad, "Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna?" So he came for lusty reasons, but so did Kubja. Kubja came to Krishna for lusty reasons, but Krishna took the fact that she'd come to him and she purified Kubja. She straightened out the old witch and made her a beautiful woman. So he's going everywhere looking for Krishna. And finally, a little boy walks up to him with a laddu in his hand. And his little boy, he says, "Little boy, who are you?" The little boy said, "I'm a thief, Makanchora." "Oh, you're a thief. You're a butter thief, huh? Well, I want to steal jewels. Maybe we can work together." So Makanchora, the butter thief, he says, "Yes, you have come to this village. Let us work together. Somehow you have come. You have stumbled across the path of bhakti. I heard you chanting Gopal's name. So let us work together." So the Makanchora, the butter thief, and the real thief, they began working together. So one day, Makanchora, the little cowherd boy who happened to befriend this rascal, one day they were walking along the road, and the little butter thief, he said, "Hey, look at this." And he manifested his beautiful feature as Krishna, bedecked with valuable jewels, and the Kastuba jewel was there, and he had beautiful armlets and necklaces and diamonds and beautiful crown. "Oh!" The man said, "Gopal, Gopal!" And he went to embrace him to get to, and then Gopal disappeared. And then he appeared someplace else. "Oh, Gopal, Gopal!" Like this. In this way, he became Krishna conscious. So, in this way, whether we stumble across the path of devotional service, such as that man did, or we come to the path of devotional service on the recommendation of a devotee, we're extremely fortunate. And we should take full advantage of our good fortune and situate ourselves properly and attain our full glory as Krishna's eternal servants. Gantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shridhar Prabhupada ki, Shishi Radha Gopinath ki, Itai Gaur Premanam ki. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? Comments? Yes?
You mentioned Gopishwara's disciples.
Students, I said.
Students.
Yeah. He only had one disciple, but he had many students. So today's the Sunday program. What time does it start?
4:30.
4:30. Is there room for the devotees to come in also? Is it mostly just the guests?
Well, there's room.
There's room.
Not much.
Not much. Can we squeeze the devotees in? More the merrier. Okay. And then there's a lecture, there's a feast, and is there anything else, like a play or something? What do you do? Oh, okay. Okay. I have one left. The Nisringadev play. Who wants to see it? Raise your hand. I have to tell you, first of all, it's not a very first-class video. It's, like the play was, well, anyway, I don't want to glorify the play because I organized it, but it was a good play, but, you know, even video can't capture the whole thing, you know, so it's like you get about 50% like that. And also, in the very beginning, for the first act and a half, in act two, there's like this horrible whining sound because the video camera and the microphone, they were somehow situated wrongly, so you hear this, and it's just like, ah. That goes away after 9 minutes, so you just have to bear with the video for 9 minutes, and that humming sound will go away, and then you'll see the play. We worked on it for 5 years. You can get a pretty good understanding. The video itself is pretty good. Devotees liked it everywhere else in Govardhan, so we'll show it. That'll be about what time? After the feast, right? What are you going to do before the feast?
Yes, it's
well, 6 o'clock, yeah.
Kirtan, class, and
movie. Oh, I see, okay. All right.
Well, the movie's about an hour and 15 minutes.
Maybe after,
I think, yeah. Because it, with all the guests, they really pack it out up there anyway, right?
Yeah.
So maybe if...
You know, it's usually programs a bit later.
Right.
And they have to, an hour and 15 minutes, then the feast.
Yeah, it'll be too much. Yeah, so... Okay, maybe a few will drift off and then there'll be room upstairs for everyone. So right after the feast, we'll have the showing of the Nisringadev play New Mayapur, 1985. Welcome on, Narasingadev Ki! Yeah.